Borjofsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Friday afternoon, it is the 10th of August. And yet another special election seems to be going the Republican way. Everybody wants to know, what does this mean, right? What's the context? We're talking here about Ohio 12, a district roughly around the Columbus area in the state of Ohio. And as of right now, Friday morning, about 10 o'clock, the race is still tilted toward the Republican, who is holding the lead. So anyway, I'll tell you why both sides here are saying what they're saying. Starting with the Democrats, the media, and their various cohorts. They are claiming victory. And it's the same thing that we have heard in previous races, that we heard, you know, what was it? In Utah, in South Carolina, in Georgia, in Arizona, Texas, where departing Republican senators in Republican districts were replaced by Republicans. The only exception to this occurred in Pennsylvania, where Connor Lamb, a Democrat, ousted a Republican seat, beat his Republican opponent. But in all these races, this is what I keep hearing over and over again. I hear, well, we came close. We came so close. And, you know, this is a district the Republicans should not have been, you know, have even been close on. But to me, first things first. A win or loss come November, and this is why people are analyzing these races. They're analyzing them, and they're important because they're somehow supposed to be bellwethers of what's going to happen in November. And in November, you have the entire House up for grabs, and enough losses in the Republican column, of course, portends a shift in power to the Democrats, and that, of course, would lead to some problems for President Trump, certainly. But stepping outside of that for a second, because we're not in November yet, these races, right, are all set against a very hostile to Trump background, right? These races, although they are localized, although they are occurring in Ohio and Texas and Pennsylvania and the like, in relatively small geographic areas, what are they? In fact, they're referendums. They become national referendums on the issues du jour. That's French for issues of the day. It allows the Democrats to localize the race and to fine tune the candidate to essentially be an anti-Nancy Pelosi, anti-Democrat, conservative light type figure. That this is, by the way, playbook Connor Lamb. That's what he did in Pennsylvania. Connor Lamb said more nasty things about Pelosi than he did about Trump. And that's incidentally what happened in Ohio, where Danny O'Connor, who's this 31-year-old freaking wet blanket guy who's, what is he? He's like the clerk recorder or something. At 31, I'm 38. I barely know what's up. I'm going to tell you this. This is a fascinating thing. So you got this 31-year-old who's running for office. He's running against kind of a boring guy, the Troy Balderson, who's not a great candidate either. But Trump comes in, holds a last-minute rally, and by all indications, it helped. Because the polls, and this is so important, if there's nothing else that you take away from this, the polls had Troy Balderson slipping very badly and headed for defeat. Going back to 2016, polling is so frequently wrong. And before every one of these elections, we have predictions from all the people in the know, the political wonk types, who are looking at the numbers and going, this isn't going to be good. This is the beginning of a blue wave. And the morning after, the blue wave doesn't happen. The Republican stays in the seat. And what do they tell us? They tell us, well, it was close, and we still deserve credit. Friends, the Democratic Party is the party of participation trophies. This is no different than handing the losing team, if your kids are in soccer or whatnot, handing trophies to the losing team. I get it. I get why a 31-year-old Democrat running in Ohio thinks he's won the race when he hasn't. He's grown up in a world where he gets recognition, love, affection, and praise for not achieving diddly squat. The midterms only matter to the extent that it shifts power in the House. To the extent that Republicans lose seats and therefore need more of their members to go along with party leadership in order to get things done. Right? You get more power. If you're the party in power, it's not enough to just have 50% plus one. It helps to have a cushion. So if you lose seats, it becomes a little bit worse. But nonetheless, 50% plus one gives you the speakership. Now, let's talk about that for a minute. A Speaker of the House right now, if the Republicans lost, would be none other than Nancy Pelosi. And friends, let me, if you think that Trump is an unpopular figure, if you think that Trump perhaps enjoys some antipathy from his own party, all of that is relative to what's going on the other side of the aisle. This is a binary equation. And we're not we're not France or Italy. We don't have 17 different political parties. We have, for now, two. And the Dems and the Republicans, the Pelosi numbers. I was curious, how many of these House Democrats going into this election in November are actually sticking by Pelosi? The answer, by the way, is a lot. But there is a significant and growing number of Democrats who won't even support her, or at the very least won't say one way or the other whether they'll support her. There are a total, these are the numbers. There's 42 Democrat nominees. They're nominated. They are not in Congress, but they're running against an incumbent. 42 nominees, dead set against Pelosi. Only 9 incumbents are dead set against Pelosi. Now, what does that tell you? That's a very small number out of 500, 600 seats in the House. 9 people who are incumbents are against Pelosi. Incumbents, if there's a Democratic incumbent right now, generally, you're looking at that as a fairly safe seat, right? It already was in Democratic hands. Trump's unpopular in Democratic areas. The person's probably going to get reelected. So, but notice the difference between the 42 versus 9. Where there are Democratic nominees, there are 42 that say, hell no, Pelosi must go. Which means they recognize that in order to win the race, they've got to peel away from Democratic Party leadership. She's out there every day babbling about God knows what and fighting with Ocasio-Cortez. And this is going to be an issue. And by the way, you say 42 out of 500 races, Sam, that's not a big number. But now let's add to it also nominees who are neither for or against, who won't commit one way or the other. And that's 34. So now you got 76 out of, less than 600 races that are all not cool with Nancy Pelosi. And the Democrats can't dump her. They can't drop a geriatric woman to the party that values victimhood and identity politics. They cannot dump a geriatric woman leading into the election. Bill, can they do that? They can't do it. Why? I'm just telling you, I understand how the feeble Democratic mind works. You can't do that. And it's the same thing that's happening here in California with Feinstein, which, by the way, right? I mean, they're fearful. There's a faction here in the state that wants to drop Feinstein. Now they're getting behind Becerra. Yeah, I know, but Right, right. And now Feinstein is you know, turns out she's got her own spy scandal. If you haven't been following this, if you've been too busy following the ups and downs of Spygate, Russia, collusion, and the Trumpster, maybe you've missed. Maybe you've been watching the mainstream media and they haven't really brought this up. But apparently 5 years ago, unbeknownst to any of us, the FBI said to Dianne Feinstein, hey, you're one of your senior staff members is a spy for the Chinese Communist government. And their retort and reply at the time, well, he don't worry about that guy. He's not a driver, even though he was described as an office staff member and a senior staffer. The story's gotten very fascinating. So now the denials are piling up. It's huge because what is Dianne Feinstein? She's a senior Democrat, not just a senator, but she's also on the Intelligence Committee, ranking member. And as such, has some of the highest clearances that allow her access to very sensitive information. Now, I don't know about you. I don't know if you are a busy business person. But I promise you that I, as a busy business person and lawyer and part-time talk show host, do a lot of my important business in the car. Now, I do not have a driver. But I have Bluetooth on my phone and I will make phone calls in the car. I mean, it's my, I don't know, guys, I think it's probably one of the easier places I can have a conversation. And I do know people who have drivers and I'm very familiar. They get comfortable with the driver and they have lots and lots of private conversations in front of the driver. In the mafia, again, not necessarily my milieu, but I understand in the mafia, the most important person in the operation is the driver. Because he's privy to all the secrets that these, you know, mob bosses are sharing amongst themselves. So the bad news, they got him. And is there any talk about this as at all in any way, shape or form influencing our public opinion of Dianne Feinstein's judgment? Of her effectiveness as a politician, as a senator? No, but every step of the way with this Trump-Russia investigation, it's Donald Trump's fault that Manafort didn't pay his taxes from 3 years before he was ever involved with the campaign. Of course. And it's Trump's fault that Flynn lied to the FBI. And it's Trump's fault that Rick Gates had four mistresses and was secreting them in various apartments across the world. This is some of the testimony that's come out this week. The double standard is shocking, and it all relates back to what will happen in November and where I see this thing, how I see this thing playing out. I don't care that these races are close. I mean, it is worrisome in the sense that if the ground shifts, if there is an October surprise in a month and a half, there could be something that could tilt the races on Election Day to the Democratic Party, where energy could transfer over. But I, you know, this week I'm noticing even CBS News, Vox, and other traditionally leftist news outlets talking about the very possibility that the Republicans hold the House. And that was not talk, by the way. That was not even in the cards anywhere 3, 4, 5 weeks ago. What matters here is the popularity of the general Democratic Party, as led by Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, et al. And, of course, on the other side, the Republicans are all branded under Trump, right? They're all Trumpists at this point, for all intents and purposes. But certain Republicans in these localized races can run against Trump, but I think at their own peril. Typically, an incumbent party loses ground in midterms when their president, okay, is unpopular. And we're told that this, you know, look at what happened, in Bush's first midterms. Look at what happened with Clinton in his first midterms. It's not just a Republican problem. It's not just a Democrat problem. It happens to both sides. Obama, etc. Well, The problem with all those examples is they had really bad favorability ratings at the time. Well, in Obama's case, worse than Trump. And Bush had Iraq, and it wasn't going well. The hurrah, hurrah of shock and awe had worn off, and now we were dying, you know, every day out there. It was not a popular time. I think that the media forgets that their own antipathies towards Trump are clouding their judgment, and that the rest of the country, and again, if you believe the polls, fine and dandy, but then you were wrong in 2016, weren't you? And you were wrong with many of these special elections that have turned out to hold Republican seats. 9 out of 10. 9 out of 10, folks. That's an A-. So Trump gets an A-. More on this when we come back. And also, you don't want to miss our legal segment today. If you haven't heard what's going on in the Buckeye State, I'm not talking about this election. I'm talking about football. Can you believe it? No, but it's we'll get to that in our legal segment because this will absolutely, I guarantee you, boil your blood. Don't go anywhere. Back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
I know I sped through that last segment. I did a Sam Nation steamroll through everything. And now I need to get back and sort of pick up some of the pieces. Now, I very quickly rode over Ocasio-Cortez. Now, not actually. It wasn't a hit and run. I just sort of said her name. I threw it out there, reminding you, of course. In case you have not been following the news, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is another young candidate. She ousted in New York State in a primary race, a very popular, longtime Democratic congressman. And in this district, by virtue of her being of the victor in the primary, she's guaranteed, all but guaranteed to be the be elected into Congress because the district's like, I don't know, like 70% Democrat. So even though she is the nominee, she's the presumptive victor of the race. So Miss Ocasio-Cortez is we'll think of her as she's sort of a magic Latina. She's out there. She's got this, you know, not attractive. Yeah, good. You know, she's a good looking lady. Everybody's calling her well spoken. I don't know. I think she's a babbler. A lot of what she says is nonsense. And then she's caught being a lightweight. We've played the clips here on the program. You can go back a few weeks and hit those up. But she's definitely much more of a Bernie-crat type Democrat than a establishment Democrat. And the word, I think the word that you got to, in order to beat the enemy, friends, you have to know the enemy. And one of my jobs I feel here on the program is to educate you on the Democratic Party. And right now, the interesting dynamic, the thing that's going on inside the party. You know that term, democratic socialist. The key word in there is not democrat or socialist, although, of course, it's defining that they're wrapping themselves up in that defunct ideology. But the real word behind it is incrementalists versus anti-incrementalists. And what do I mean by this? There are fights breaking out currently in the Democratic Party over how quickly we turn America into a socialist utopia. In other words, do we take an incremental approach to, let's say, something like single payer? Or do we go in and just go, wham, that's it. Tomorrow, starting July, 31st, we're single payer. No more private doctors. If you are an owner of a private clinic, you've got, you know, 60 days to wind up your business and close up shop. And all you doctors can apply for government jobs at government clinics. And, but baby, if you think I'm being extreme, this is exactly the type of idea that people like Ms. Ocasio-Cortez have. But this is where it gets so bad for the Democratic Party, because this crap doesn't sell. I mean, in the general political marketplace that is the United States of political ideas, this is a non-starter. It does sell in a kooky Democratic district in upstate New York. It does sell in a kooky Democratic district somewhere in Washington state, somewhere near Seattle. It does sell in a place in Oregon. It does sell, you get my point, in very deep blue areas. This is no bueno if you're, and by the way, I'm just using that term as a tribute to Ms. Ocasio-Cortez's heritage. This is no bueno to use this type of ideology branding for the Democratic Party in red districts or purple districts, districts that, you know, sort of are very centrist, more centrist. Why? Because they're not interested in that. If on one hand, they've got to choose between Trump, who's, okay, he's kind of a buffoon, but he's not doing that bad of a job. And on the other hand, yeah, we want a Democratic Party that looks like the next generation that wants to overthrow Nancy Pelosi is even more bat crap crazy than Pelosi was. You know, people in it, and oh yeah, and by the way, the economy is doing pretty well, and we've got unemployment at record lows and GDP's out, you know, just through the roof. The economy is going to be a big issue, guys. I'm telling you right now, Minnesota, all those blue districts, they think they're going to win. They may not. They're not going to want it. These are districts that are looking at what the Trump economy is doing, and they are liking it. I promise you, they're liking it. So don't believe in a blue wave coming. Not with all this kind of crazy stuff. Buckeye State up next. Football. Ohio State. Yep. You don't want to miss this. Even if you know nothing about football, as I do, not myself, but this is a good story. Don't go anywhere.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Nation here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Rarely wrong, always right. And we always take this time every week, the bottom of the first hour, to go through a story that has some legal importance so I can provide some cutting-edge legal analysis. Now, in Ohio State, the head coach of the football team is in deep, deep water. Doo-doo, whatever you want to call it. He's in trouble. And he is in trouble. He has been placed on administrative leave because he failed to reprimand his subordinate. He failed to reprimand an assistant coach at the university who reported to him a suspected case of spousal abuse. Now, when I tell you what the suspected case of spousal abuse, you realize the case is extremely light. It's thin. It's based on hearsay. It's an angry ex-spouse in a divorce proceeding. So really what we have here, I'll provide political analysis first and legal analysis second. What we have here is the Me Too movement moving into the next phase. I have so many of my friends saying, the pendulum, it's going to swing back. It's going to swing back the other way. My gut on this is it's still going to get a little more extreme before it gets any better. And in this case is a perfect example of it. What you have is the crowds baying for blood of a person who failed to do what they would have done, wanted done in the first instance. In other words, you've got this coach who is not terminating somebody on allegations alone. Now, think about this. We've gotten very comfortable here, or at least, you know, the crowds of the pitchforks have gotten very comfortable ending people's lives effectively, ending their careers over allegations, unproven allegations. Now, we're a country of laws and we believe in due process. And this is not how it works, of course. If you're a democratic socialist, you're all about kangaroo courts and sending people off to the gallows on allegations alone. So this now is you see what's going on here. Now, what all transpired here is some time ago, the wife of the assistant coach, the putative victim, spoke to the wife of the head coach and complained bitterly about her then husband, now ex-husband. Supposedly, in that complaint, she now claims she told this lady, "I was beaten by my husband." Now, legally, the question is, what is the duty of this coach vis-a-vis his direct subordinate? Because generally speaking, allegations of criminal wrongdoing, let's take the wife beating out of it. It's a criminal wrongdoing. It's an assault. Okay? It's spousal abuse. Every state I know of has a law against it. So what obligation do you as a boss, if you supervise people, you find out that they've done something wrong, what outside of work, has nothing to do with work, what obligation do you have to address it in the office? And the answer is, generally speaking, if you're not a mandatory reporter for example, child abuse, in California it's defined, mandatory reporters, you guys know who you are, you have to report child abuse, elder abuse, and dependent adult abuse. Very specific. If it falls outside of that, as a teacher, for example, you don't have to report it. You don't have a duty. And that's legally where the rub is. And by the way, as a leader, you're constantly balancing. You've got to decide. You've got to make judgment calls. Believe this behavior is happening. Certainly, if somebody has been convicted of spousal abuse, they're unfit to serve in a leadership position anywhere. I probably wouldn't want to hire that person at my firm. But it's, you know, certain convictions in certain states, you can't discriminate against somebody for having a conviction on their record. Did you know there's that part of it too? There's so many layers to this, but the bottom line is you've got the crowds, you've got the crazies mad that somebody didn't burn somebody else because they heard an allegation. And we cannot become a place, we cannot become this country where allegations uttered by anyone, it doesn't matter how credible or incredible they are, that they can affect someone's career, their life, their relationships, without some formal process defined in law for proving that those allegations are in fact true. So I think this is, I think the university here taking a step back on this and putting this guy on leave, they may end up in hot water in how they're treating the head coach. Honestly, that may turn into an employment claim. We'll see. All right, Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, back after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Yeah, Sam Rzhovsky, look, one more thing to add to that Ohio State story. And that is that this Me Too phenomena, in other words, these hysterical, now you'll see where I'm going with this. These hysterical inquisitions of people based on unfounded allegations have occurred in history before. This is nothing new. All of you silly people that think you're revolutionaries and you're doing some incredible new thing where you're going to rid the world of these these Harvey Weinsteins and Jerry Sanduskys. What's going on in Ohio is something like this. The Inquisition, Torquemada has come to town. The Inquisition has now gone not just looking for heretics and burning heretics at the stake, but burning people who haven't turned heretics in to the Inquisition. Now, this happened, all of you democratic socialists out there, this happened in Stalin's trials in the 50s. My parents lived through this. This stuff, you know, I know you guys want to bring all that back. I understand that. I hear you loud and clear. But this happened. My parents witnessed this type of hysteria. My father's frequently spoken about in his town where he was living as a young boy, where somebody would be accused of being an anti-communist, of being a Western sympathizer. It was nonsense. They picked somebody. That guy, you know, somebody said somewhere that he'd had an unauthorized book in his library. Search of the house didn't reveal a book. That didn't matter. Facts do not matter to leftists. They're not troubled by a lack of facts. The person would be brought up in front of it was an Inquisition panel. Show trial. They were called processes. There's a word for it in Czech. But anyway, they came up in front of the panel. The evidence would be read. Everybody would say, yeah, 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 yeah. And they were made to grovel and to apologize. The objective of this process, regardless of what the punishment was to shame people and have them accept the lies that were being said about them. Sound familiar? Anybody? Does this sound familiar at all? I love when these liberals who, you know, like, I don't know, like Bill Maher, for example, you know, he's a liberal guy, gets accused of, you know, he said some word. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have said the word. I'm so sorry. Prostrating himself in front of the politically correct gods. It's no different than the people who, and I don't judge them for it, and certainly in a state like my parents grew up in, when you're facing death or imprisonment, torture and the like, I mean, you know, only the brave stood up to that. But we've got to make sure that in this country we have some brave people left, and that these brave people stand up to this nonsense. One detail from this Ohio State story is that the guy, the coach is accepting sort of the premise of the argument. I should have, had I known, I did not know, I didn't fully know, when I knew, when he knew it, that type of thing. I got one woman talking to another woman and I'm supposed to do something about that? Come on, I'm a married guy, I love my wife, But geez Louise, if I had to take as gospel truth everything that one of her, you know, batty friends says to her, I would be running around, you know, chasing ghosts. Bill, are you laughing? You're laughing. I know this is going to see now this will be taken out of context. Now somebody's going to play this clip and use it to say that I'm a misogynistic jerk, but that's not the case at all. I'm just saying that people gossip, okay? Things get blown out of proportion. And you don't end people's careers over it. But this hysteria is not new. What the Democratic Party, what all these leftist freaks are doing is not new. And it relates, by the way, to this new direction of the Democratic Party. I'll talk about that when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rojofsky. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rejofsky, hot off the presses here. Bethany Frankel's boyfriend, apparently they've been on and off, whatever that means, Dennis Shields, has just been found dead from an apparent drug overdose. They're going to blame this on Trump. They're going to blame this on Trump. And, well, it happened in Trump Tower. Naturally, they're going to blame it on Trump. Oh, you think I'm okay. All right, I'm joking. We'll see where the news cycle comes up. It's remember when that guy basically caught his apartment on fire and ended up being, you know, tried to blame Trump for it, died in his apartment in Trump Tower. Everything bad that happens in Trump Tower now is Trump's fault. At any rate, these young blood revolutionaries in the Democratic Party are going to be the doom and the end of the Democratic Party as we know it. And this is why, my friends, I am so excited. I am tickled pink over the fact that people are still taking them seriously. Ocasio-Cortez, the new star of the Democratic Party, lost every single race that she put, you know, that where she supported a candidate on Tuesday. She's a loser, right? She won in a very, 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 very Democratic district. And that's fine and dandy, but she's picking these guys. For example, the Democratic primary for Michigan governor, she got behind a young guy, Abdul El Said. Yeah, that didn't turn out so well. He came in a distant second. All right, so she's losing. But Tom Perez, who is the chair of the Democratic Party, has not since Tuesday, today's Friday, has not in any way, shape, or form denounced her or distanced himself from her, and this is significant. The party knows, the party leadership knows, and it's a miscalculation, but they know that they can't distance themselves away from her because they need her supporters. They need the Bernie Sanders wing of the party. How do they know it? Well, hell's bells, they're the ones that, the Democratic Party is the one that cooked the race for Hillary. Screwed Bernie out of it. They know where the popular support is. Okay, just because they did wrong in 2015 and 16 doesn't mean they don't have an idea of where the political pulse is. So they need these people. But in these general election races, okay, now we're moving from primaries to general election, right? This is what November is going to be about. This is what 2020 is going to be about. If the Democratic Party doesn't distance itself away from Ocasio-Cortez and other of these wingnuts who are basically just retreads of tired Bolshevist agitation, then what are you going to have? It's going to spook people. It's going to spook people because it comes down to the economy. It's the economy, stupid. This is a James Carville, Bill Clinton moment. Carville being Bill Clinton's Karl Rove. That's what we'll call him. Carville, raging Cajun, right, is what they call him. He's from Louisiana. He got it right away. The economy. People care about feeding their families. They care about the paycheck. They care about how much money the government takes out of that paycheck. More specifically, they care about how much is left after the government is done putting their hand in their paycheck. And all of those indicators are good. Friends, socialism does not sell when life is good. At least not with most people. All right. More on this. Some local Orange County news that is national news. And Broadcom, you guys know this company? Yeah, so did you heard Henry Nicholas, the founder of Broadcom, was arrested in Las Vegas? This is a great story. This happened yesterday. All right, don't go anywhere. A lot of good stuff coming up. Sam Rejofsky, back after this.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Hi, Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation here on the second hour of the weekly Sam Nation radio show. Conveniently located on your Apple Podcast, right in your pocket. Take it on the go. Me with you whenever you want. Delightful. Gosh, maybe my wife will just settle for the podcast and do away with the real me. far less trouble and a lot cleaner. Anyway, that's right. You get to enjoy me, and I'm not even leaving dirty socks anywhere. So that's a win. So I have to tell you, as a lawyer and as a political observer, I'm fascinated by this Paul Manafort trial. The Manafort case, just to reiterate this again, Paul Manafort was Trump's campaign manager briefly during the campaign. And if you just remember a little bit of the history, Trump had to sort of the campaign was doing well, okay, but it was still sort of an upstart renegade operation, and it needed some Republican GOP, you know, behind the scenes wheeling and dealing done. This had nothing to do with elections, with Facebook, with Russia, with anything like that. The campaign was, Trump was winning races. He was getting votes. But within the Democratic Party, call it machinery, he was having some of the same problems Bernie Sanders was having on the Democratic side, only the Republicans play a lot more fair. And so what Trump recognized is that Corey Lewandowski was all fine and great, high energy guy, but he didn't have any connections with the Democratic Party establishment. So Trump brings in an establishment Republican, Paul Manafort, to come in and take his election, take his campaign across the finish line in the primaries to hit the required number of delegates that would secure the nomination. Okay, bit of history there. So Manafort comes in, he gets Trump across the finish line, gets him through the nomination, through the convention, and then after that, he's gone. This case here has nothing to do with any of that, except for one little particularly great gem that I enjoyed. Rick Gates, who is Manafort's deputy, they were both charged. Rick cut a deal. He cut a deal because he actually may get a note. He may end up doing no jail time. The part of his deal is that the prosecutors have told him that they would not oppose a request by his attorneys to get probation only. But Rick Gates is now, of course, testifying on behalf of Mueller's team in court. And Rick Gates, the only way this touches Trump in any way is that Rick Gates allegedly stole money, or he claims he did, so we can take him at his word. He claims he stole money from the Trump inauguration fund. So, I mean, all he did was say Trump or Trump's inaugural committee was defrauded by this guy. Stealing from campaigns happens everywhere. I mean, okay, so and that's pretty much it. The rest of this case is all about two dirty dudes, both him and Manafort. From my vantage point, I mean, they just didn't pay taxes. They have unreported income. They have foreign bank accounts that they, you know, that they didn't check the boxes for and give and, you know, and provide to the IRS. Those are all crimes, and it's pretty straightforward. I unless it's something I'm not sitting in court every day. I'm reading the secondhand, third-hand transcripts of all this, or reports of all this. And so, but based on that, just casual observer here with, of course, some legal knowledge, being a lawyer, I'll tell you, that's the case. It's a tax fraud case. Now, what is interesting, and I want to talk about this a little bit, because what's been in the news the last few days is that the trial judge, the federal judge, T.S. Eliot, who is presiding over this case, is really beating up on the prosecutors. He's chastising them. He told one person, "You've got tears in your eyes." You know, he's like, "No, my eyes are just watering. I'm sorry." He's beating up on them. I've had a number of people ask me, what does this mean as far as the case? Like, what does this mean? Is this good? Does this look like Manafort's going to get off? And I, two things. One, don't read tea leaves when it comes to cases. They go the way they're generally the way they're supposed to go. And if the evidence is there to show that Manafort didn't pay his taxes, it's pretty black and white. Financial crimes are easy to prove. It's black and white. He'll get convicted. Spoiler alert, right? But the question will be now, how does the judge berating one side, the prosecution here, in front of the jury, what does that do? I'll tell you from my experience. It's not what you would think. See, the conventional wisdom is, you know, if you've got the judge, if the teacher's beating up on one of the pupils, you go, wow, you think, wow, you know, that pupil really must be stupid if the teacher's picking on him. But if over time a jury picks up on it being unjustified or at going too far, sympathies begin to develop. Jurors, I've seen this happen over again. You're sitting in a trial. You think that, the jury is getting kicked around by the judge. You think you're going to lose because you're being treated like the absolute dummy in the room, and then you win, and the jury afterwards says, "Man, we just feel really sorry for you, sir, about how you were treated by that judge. We just thought that was really unfair." So I'll tell you, the answer here depends on what the judge is like with the jury. I haven't tried any cases in federal court. I'll tell you, I was on one jury here in Orange County in Judge Carter's courtroom some years back. And in that, my perspective as a juror, Carter is extremely tough on attorneys, and he kicks them around. But he is an absolute sweetheart when it comes to juries. And every person on my jury, every person loved Judge Carter. I mean, loved him. And so when the respect level is high for the judge, they do pick up on cues when the judge then reprimands somebody. So I think that's the real factor. And so what does this all mean? I want you to have something clever to talk about on Monday when you're back at work. And people are going to say, Manafort, what's going to happen? I think he's probably going to get convicted. But this the judge beating up on the prosecution or whomever, I think that really isn't going to matter in any of this. So we'll continue to follow this case very closely, but the greater political implication of it, because every story I've read today, yesterday, following the midterm loss in Ohio, and it seems at least that the Democrat lost in Ohio, is writing, well, don't you worry, people, don't you worry, because the Democrats are going to win. The wind is behind them. The wind is in their sails, right? And the first thing that they list, if they don't list the Manafort trials, the first thing that they list it immediately after Trump Russia. And both of them are nothing burgers. I read another piece where even that one Republican congressman from New York, I don't know if you saw this, but he was charged with securities fraud for insider trading. So he was arrested and he vows to stay on and fight until he's convicted, right? So he's, you know, but they're trying to say that's going to affect Trump. And I don't see that. Trump has an independent identity, that's not connected necessarily to the Republican Party. In essence, it goes one way only. What the Republicans do doesn't necessarily reflect poorly on Trump. But when Trump comes in to a district like Ohio 12, when he comes in and takes a Republican no-name kind of a fuddy-duddy candidate, Troy Balderson, comes in and begins tweeting vigorously supporting him, flies in, does a big rally, gets everybody whipped up. Jim Acosta then from CNN cries about it for a week. Remember our show last week? This is not America. Well, what does it do? It energized the Republican base. And I have said this over and over again, that the challenge in the midterms is going to be getting, you know, Trump voters out to support mediocre GOP candidates. And that is exactly 100% what Ohio 12 was all about. You had a mediocre candidate. You had a candidate that wasn't necessarily a big Trumpist. And you had a district, though, that voted overwhelmingly for Trump. So now what do you got? Well, I'm just telling you. And not a lot is on the line, right? How motivated are people? Voter turnout is important. Voter turnout. How motivated are people to go out for a special election? Will Republicans be more motivated to go out in November and vote for their respective congressman if they feel or are concerned that the party of Nancy Pelosi and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez might end up in charge of the legislative branch of government? It's motivating. Of course, as I keep saying, the kookier the Democrats are, the more motivating it is for Republicans. Now flip the coin. How motivated are Democrats to go out and send a protest vote to Trump? It kind of depends on what happens between now and November, doesn't it? Because why did Trump win? In part, Trump won because Hillary lost. That's part of the answer. And Hillary lost because she didn't get her people motivated enough to go out and vote. Democrats went it out and vote. Most Democrats I know didn't vote for Hillary. They voted against Trump. There's a difference, even if the vote cast is exactly the same in either scenario. And the difference, of course, friends, is motivation. And motivation begins to give us insight into how these things are going to turn out and how they're going to work out in the long run. But no. The Democrats keep patting themselves on the back and giving themselves participation trophies in these races that they lose over and over and over again. New York Times yesterday said that their quote was, "Connor, lambs do not grow on trees," referencing the lone victorious Democrat who won Pennsylvania 18 back on March 13th. And what does that mean? Well, of course they don't grow on trees. You're 1 for 10. I mean, they don't grow on trees. But you have to have quality candidates, and running some, you know, the Republicans are running some losers, but so are the Democrats. And the problem is the primaries are picking kooky Democrats. And this is what happened in Alabama, of course. The Republican Party picked a kooky guy. And Roy Moore, right? And that's what ended up putting Doug Jones, a Democrat, in a very conservative state. This is all stuff we're going to follow closely, but everything in the news, even these tangential issues, they all are connected. They're all linked together. And this is what we do here on this program. We connect all these dots and put it before you, so you are well informed. You're not going to get this from watching Jim Acosta at CNN. That's Comedy Hour. In fact, you might as well just relabel that. You know, if you've got a CNN setting, a preset on your, you know, just put it next to the Comedy Network, and you'll be just fine. All right, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rogowski, some evidence, I think, of the tide turning here is coming from a piece in the Washington Post. Washington Post being, of course, a publication right now almost entirely devoted to Trump opposition. Now, Mark Thiessen, who is a CIA analyst turned reporter, has written a piece, and this is in the Washington Post. And it starts like this, talking about Dianne Feinstein's most recent spy problems. Quote, imagine if it emerged that the Republican chairman of the House or Senate Intelligence Committee had a Russian spy working on their Senate staff. Think it would cause a political firestorm? Well, this week we learned that Senator Dianne Feinstein had a Chinese spy on her staff who worked for her for 20 years, who was listed as an office director on payroll records and served as her driver when she was in San Francisco, all while reporting to China's Ministry of State Security through China's San Francisco consulate. Now, what was the reaction to all of this in the mainstream media? Nothing, barely a peep, writes Mark Thiessen. And I think, if the Washington Post is beginning to challenge an establishment Democrat Party narrative on something like this, what's the operative thing? What caught my eye here? Well, they're comparing it to Russiagate. We've become so hysterical that any contact. I mean, if Trump did Miss America in Moscow, he's a Russian spy. Right. Trump's been in Moscow. That's it. He's compromised. He's a Russian spy. There's no proof. Right? He met with a Russian lawyer who has Kremlin ties. That's it. He's a Russian spy. This is what we've been hearing, right, in the media, in The Washington Post. This is a problem. They're suspicious. We have reason to believe. Da, 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 da. And now there's, and I understand it's an opinion piece, but you've. Now they're looking at this and going, this is an issue. This is a problem. It's a credibility problem, because what's good for the goose is good for the gander, or at least it ought to be. Now, we know, of course, that the media plays fast and loose with these things and blows things out of proportion when it's involving Trump. But the question right now will be, with this Mueller probe of Trump, with this Russiagate collusion case against Trump, where's it going to go? This week, big news was what? Trump refused, or says that he's basically postponing indefinitely sitting down with Mueller. This is the smart move for Trump to make. He should not be sitting with Mueller. If he has half a brain, he's going to listen to his attorneys and only provide written answers and leave it at that. Now, remember, you can always refuse to answer any questions by pleading privilege, right? You've got the right to not self-incriminate yourself in the Fifth Amendment. So you can always assert that privilege. But, you know, the risk, of course, is that nobody wants to do that because you sound guilty. You kind of like Godfather 2, right? And you had Michael Corleone say, "I wish to assert my Fifth Amendment privilege," you know, when he was being grilled in the investigation. And that, of course, you know, you don't want that. You don't want to be that guy. So, Mueller investigation. Is Mueller going to get fired? This is the hubbub, right? Trump is refusing to speak to him. Now he's sending out these cryptic tweets saying, stay tuned, after railing against Mueller. What Trump needs to do pronto is get rid of Attorney General Jeff Sessions. That's the problem. Sessions gave up the ghost here he is a weak guy. He is a go-along, get-along Senate Republican guy. He's a good man. But what Trump needs is he needs an Eric Holder. I can't believe I'm going to say this. He needs someone like Obama had an Eric Holder who is competent and is on the president's team. Now, we don't like Eric Holder because he was a little too good at being on Obama's team. But he was. And the Justice Department did more damage in a short period of time to college camp, anything from college campuses to race relations and the like, because the Justice Department was effectively fulfilling the president's vision of what a political landscape in the country ought to look like. And the abdication of responsibility by Jeff Sessions, turning over these decisions to Rod Rosenstein, who is a deep state operative, to say the least, is Trump's Achilles heel. Mueller is not the issue. The fact that Mueller was given free rein by Rosenstein, who was empowered to do that by Jeff Sessions, that's the issue. So what Trump needs to do, I'm telling you, I'm sure this is what they are talking about right now in Bedford, New Jersey, as he enjoys a working vacation, is what they're going to do with Sessions and when. But I promise you, Sessions is on the chopping block because, and if he's not, I mean, I don't know what they're thinking. Got to get rid of Sessions. That's where all of this trouble began, and that person's the one who can rein in the special counsel. Not fire him, but start limiting him. Not all related crimes. Why are we spending special counsel hundreds of millions of dollars on a special counsel to investigate a tax fraud case against Manafort? What? Yeah, it's a crime. Yeah, he should be convicted. But this is not what we intended. It's what the Democrats intended. That's what they wanted from the beginning. But this is not how this should have gone down. All right, Sam Rojofsky, we've got our Friday Funny segment starring a famous billionaire up next.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Majowski. You'll find him very interesting. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Friday Funny. Here it is, a bit of levity in an otherwise cruel and unforgiving world. What does $3.8 billion buy you? Sorry, according to Forbes, $3.1 billion. What does it buy you? A few suitcases of heroin, cocaine, MDMA, and methamphetamines. This, according to the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. In possession of said materials, illicit drugs, was one none other than Henry T. Nicholas. Not a neighbor of mine, but he lives relatively close to me. The co-founder of Broadcom, a chip maker, very troubled man. Now, it's a sad story. First observation is that people make a big mistake when they go to Vegas. I think this is false advertising, actually, on Las Vegas's part. Where is Las Vegas? Trick question. Where is it? It's not in Las Vegas. It's in Nevada. What is Nevada? Well, first of all, Nevada is a state run out of a place. Well, Nevada is a very conservative state. All right. I know that Vegas says that you can live out your fantasies and your dreams, and I know they allow gambling, which we think is super cool in California. I get it. But Nevada is very strict. Their police are strict. Their courts are strict. Look at OJ and others. So what happens is these guys come in. They're used to California. Of course, he would get arrested for this in California, too. But they're used to living, doing crazy things and getting away with it. And they don't. As a lawyer, I'm telling you, this is a bigger deal that it happened in Las Vegas than if it happened in L.A. 100%. Now, with drugs, it's all about quantity. I don't know what the, you know, grams or pounds or whatever the measurement is here of the weight of all this stuff. It's going to matter. This guy's going to have, of course, the best attorneys. Look for this to become a big case. He was arrested with his girlfriend, who is a former wife of a co-founder or the family that co-founded American Express and Wells Fargo. Henry Nicholas. This is like a tale of two partners. Henry Nicholas started Broadcom together with Henry Samueli. Samueli was Nicholas's professor at UCLA. I don't even know this. Samueli was a professor at UCLA. Nicholas was one of his grad students. Together, they both put in $5,000 and started a multi-billion dollar company. They make chips for cell phones and computers and the like, and semiconductors. So they're very it's a very successful business. And they both have a lot of stocks and shares in the company. Nicholas has no affiliation anymore, I think, with the company at all because he's a nut. Samueli's a tough guy, but he's this guy who, you know, has a family, is kind of grounded, and you know, he owns the Anaheim Ducks, big time philanthropist. But Nicholas is this guy who built a sex dungeon under his house, allegedly. This is all great stories here in Orange County. Yeah, he had a big house. And he instructed his, whoever was the developer of his contractor, to start excavating under his house, allegedly, right, for purposes of having a secret place to do drugs and confer and meet with hookers. And it all got discovered when the guy that's worth $3.1 billion didn't pay his contractor. This, my friends, is a good rule to learn. If you're going to have your contractor build you a sex dungeon, and you don't want anyone to find out, pay the man. So this is when a guy who's very intelligent builds a big company, doesn't make logical decisions like this. What do you think is involved in that? Almost always drugs and some crazy woman. So there's a lesson in there for all of us. Sam Rzhovsky, back after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation. Will the real Republican please stand up? Please stand up. Wednesday on MSNBC, I saw John Kasich, who is the... do I need to introduce him? Kasich, who is the vanilla wafer of the establishment wing of the Republican Party, an absolute dummy nincompoop, governor of the state of Ohio, opined why the election was so close in Ohio 12th and said, "There's no question that people sent a message to the party to Republicans, knock it off. The chaos, the divisions, I mean kids being separated from their parents at the border, these crazy tariffs. Hey, we're going to take your health care. We're going to kill Obamacare, which means you're not going to have any health care." I can't even read this. This is a Republican. You know, maybe, and I'm going to go on just a wild, you know, ledge here. Maybe some of the problems that the Republican Party has in gaining traction in these races is these Republican politicians who sound just like Democrats. Think about this. I am reading everything that Kasich is saying, and this could be Nancy Pelosi. I mean, It could be Nancy Pelosi. He's reading off a litany of complaints of things that the Trump administration has done that suck, according to him. Could be Nancy Pelosi. This could be Chuck Schumer. But it's coming from Kasich. This is brand confusion. Ford, where am I going with this? Ford and Chevy, they both make pickup trucks, right? Oh, do you know what these two companies, what they do? They try to make themselves different than their competition. They have to. They have to because there has to be a reason why you buy a Ford over a Chevy or vice versa. It's no different in a binary election, Republican, Democrat. You've got to pick. Well, why am I voting for a party of John Kasich that basically sounds just like the party of Nancy Pelosi? Why do that? And if you're a sort of Republican, wishy-washy, leans Republican kind of person, what are you inclined to do when you have candidates that talk like Kasich, that sound like Democrats? You're going to stay home. You're going to stay home. You're going to stay home just the way you did in 2008, in 2012. And then you're going to come out of hiding. When do you come out of hiding? You come out of hiding when Donaldus Magnificus comes out swinging. When he's saying things that are, 5 to 8% crazy, but at least 90% spot on. He's saying things that you fundamentally agree with. He's speaking truths. He's speaking uncomfortable truths to even your own party that has been nothing but Milli Vanilli milk toast for years and years. This is you don't have to be a policy wonk. You don't have to be some sort of expert in polling data to get some basic top level understanding of what is occurring in this country politically. And when I look at guys like Kasich and others who are in the Republican Party saying these things, and they are so certain that their worldview is correct, I'm struck by a very critical thing, and that is that more so than Republican and Democrat, the 2016 was about a repudiation of establishment, and it was a repudiation of an establishment government that had too much power over our lives. People fundamentally, Americans, if you want to talk about what it is to be America, it's not white, black, red, whatever. Doesn't matter how high your cheekbones are or what your grandmama told you about your family. No, what matters is we're feisty and independent people. Now, the Democratic Party wants to change that. They want to put us all on welfare and dependent on the state. But we're still that. We're still that country that is fiercely independent, strong, and feisty. And we want government that represents us. We want government that gets out of the way. So when the right of the country rebels against establishment, they want to be rid of the Nancy Pelosi's and the Kasich's and the John Boehner's and the Paul Ryan's. We're sick of them all. That's what the 2016 election was about. There's still enough people in the country that want those, take everything for granted and state above all else, Republicans and Democrats out of the picture. And so in this sense, what Trump will have to do, and I suspect things continue as they are, he will be successful at this. He's got to re-image, rewrite, remodel the Republican Party. And the Republican Party has to get back to not crying about separating people at the border. I mean, this is insane. We got to be a law and order party. Speaking of law and order, some quick comments here on Chicago. Rahm Emanuel, of course, in the news. We'll do that when we come back. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's
ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Marjowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Marjowski, Sam Nation. I don't want to give anything away here prematurely or ruin your weekend, but people are dying in Chicago of gunshot wounds left and right. Now, unfortunately for our friends on the left, those are not racist police bullets that are wreaking all the havoc. Rather, these are legally and illegally obtained weapons in the hands of gangbangers that are not being prosecuted or otherwise stopped by the local government. So I'm reading all these. The Chicago Sun Tribune had an article. We need more gun control. We need more gun control. That's the answer. And so Chicago and Illinois, respectively, having some of the toughest gun control measures in the country, have the highest death rate from handgun violence. Why? Well, it's easy. Not easy, but it's fairly obvious to me. You have a city that has been run and mismanaged by left-wing kooks forever. It's being currently managed by Rahm Emanuel, who is none other than Obama's former chief of staff. And these people, okay, getting again into the mind of the Democrat, what matters to them? Victimhood. Who's the victim? Race relations. Whose fault is that? It's the white guy. It's the rich guy. It's the male. It's the patriarchy. What if the nonsense all this stuff is? They have the wrong boogeyman. The left, when it comes to fixing problems, chase ghosts. And the ghost is the evil white man keeping everybody else down, the evil wealthy people taking advantage of the unfortunate, creating a system of economics, right, that is completely hostile to business, which pushes business out of the state, out of the city, out of the state, out of the county, which reduces the number of jobs, increases poverty. And now in these neighborhoods that are predominantly black, because Democratic policies invariably screw people of color, in these neighborhoods, what do these young people have? They don't have jobs. The schools suck donkey because, you know, they're more concerned about teaching them why Adam became Eve and not, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. Yeah, I mean, what do they have? They have gangs. They don't have fathers. Fathers have been replaced by a welfare state brought about by, you know, courtesy of the Democratic Party. They have gangs. And this is absolutely the gospel truth. And I'm also reminded of the book, The Death and Life of Great American Cities, Jane Jacobs. The premise of the book was all about how urban planning, especially leftist urban planning, has created a lot of problems in inner cities. And one of the things, the creation of projects, right, these great places that we're going to house poor people in. But the projects, actually, by removing them out of the city center, putting them in isolated parks, it's basically bad urban planning in the 70s and 80s and 90s that are creating a tremendous amount of problems today, that are creating these Sherwood-type forests out of public parks in places where you're more likely to find a needle in the sand than a child playing. Let business be business. Let lower the minimum wage. Let a company hire a young person of color, not at freaking $18 an hour, whatever the hell it is. Let them take a chance on a kid that needs mentorship. And just maybe, that's one step toward achieving a place where opportunity and hope abounds. All right, it's been a fun show, guys. I'm glad to be here, and enjoy your weekend. We're out of time. Back here next Friday. Same place, you know the drill. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. Over now. Keep on learning.